most powerful forces of good ever assembled. These are the Super Friends.
Don't make me angry. You wouldn't like me when I'm angry.
Let's go, Bob.
Up, up, and away!
Okay, here we go, loyal listeners. It's time for another issue of the Rootinest Tootinest podcast in the Wild West, the Geek Legacy Comic Corner. I'm your host, Jeff Muller, also known as the Mighty Jerd, and once again, I'm joined by my constant adversary, the Quentin Turnbull to my Jonah Hex, Geek Legacy's managing editor for all things comics, Tyler Waterman. How's the New England summer treating you, man?
Oh, it's terrible and hot and cold the same day. And also, I'm pretty sure that you just made a Jonah Hex reference.
So I did.
Something I never thought would happen on this podcast.
Me either. I tell you, I'm in such a spirit of low selling comics after Comic Con that I figured I'd pick the most obscure reference I could tonight.
Wrap your arms around All Star Western, my friend.
Oh my goodness! Yeah, this is the only time that's ever going to happen. Trust me.
Well, we're freshly out of San Diego Comic-Con 2013. I'm happy to see that you survived the experience.
I did. I survived. I didn't catch the nerd flu, which is good.
That is good.
There was no zombie outbreak.
Also good, depending on how you look at it.
It was a good time, man. Comic-Con, I mean, let me just put it out there. Comic-Con is amazeballs, man. I love the crap out of that place. It's a shame you weren't there, but, you know, the rest of us had a good time.
You fucker. The thing about comic conventions is they're single-handedly the best kind of convention. They really are. I've been to a whole bunch of different things in life, and there's just no better con than a Comic-Con. There really isn't.
It doesn't
matter where it is or how big, it's always great.
It is, but let me tell you something. San Diego, you can't explain it to people. It's one of those things where people think they understand how crazy it is until they get there, and then it's just a whole nother level of awesome craziness. I mean, 130,000 people came into town for Comic-Con this year.
That's incredible.
4 days, 130,000 people, and downtown San Diego has 10,000 hotel rooms. I mean, it is a sea of people, all in costume. The whole city embraces it. Every restaurant, for as far as you can walk, the waiters and the waitresses are dressed up. There's big banners on every building. It's nirvana. It is amazing. Definitely go if you get the chance, man.
Oh, I'll be there next year for sure.
All right. I'm going to hold you to that.
Good. Please do.
All right. So, I mean, I hesitate to even ask. I mean, there's so much news to talk about right now. I don't even know if we're going to get to reviewing comics. So, I mean, a million different things came out of Comic-Con. And to the listeners out there, this is going to be a spoiler-heavy podcast. We're going to talk about a lot of crap. If you don't want to know anything that's coming and you want to be surprised every month, wait until probably 20 minutes from now when we start reviewing books, because we're going to talk a lot of stuff that came out, a lot of really cool stuff from both Marvel, DC, and some independent stuff. So, yeah, there's that. Get ready.
Yeah, I think the disclaimer is clear. I mean, at this point, you can't. And to be honest with you, a lot of this stuff isn't spoilery so much in the sense that you just know what's coming, but you don't know how it happens.
That's
so there
true.
Is that too.
It is true.
But yeah, particularly on the Marvel side, if you don't want to know the next storylines, good luck looking at Marvel News anywhere you go, for that matter. They'll tell you everything if you ask. And that really seemed to kind of be the tone between the big two at this con. There's always something that defines them apart from each other. And what it really seemed to be this year was that Marvel came in. They've already told us so many things about so many of the stories coming up that you kind of went in thinking, well, what could they possibly have? And nothing up my sleeve, suddenly they had a lot. It's nothing huge. It's kind of like they used regular media to promote the big events, and Comic-Con they focused on, like, by the way, here's the other stories that are going to be going on in the background.
Right.
And you know, these are stories that are confined to one book or to, you know, just one or two books. These aren't major events. But there was some crazy stuff. DC, on the other hand, really did the opposite. They told you, you know, if you knew everything that was coming up to that Wednesday, they kind of told you everything that was going to be up till the following Wednesday. You know, a lot of it was focused on books that have been on shelves for weeks, which was really weird to me. It tells me that they probably have some big things planned, and there's no way to talk about them without saying, we killed blah, or we did this. Yeah. So I think that's why. So keep that in mind. But really, besides a few things here and there, they kept it very close to current time and very tied to what we already know. Very different between the two.
Yeah, the DC panels that I went to, it was very obvious that the editorial staff from DC and their PR people were there, and they were keeping everyone on a very short leash in answering questions. They were very hush-hush. It was very very secretive in a lot of ways. So, yeah, they were nowhere near as free as the Marvel guys were, just kind of chit-chatting. And honestly, it wasn't as fun sitting in on the DC panels as it was the Marvel panels either, which was a shame. But before we dig into all the specifics of the Comic-Con goodness, I want to remind all the listeners that later this issue, I'm going to give you details on our new promotion, where Geek Legacy will be giving you free stuff starting next week for being a fan of the show. And who doesn't love free stuff? No one, that's who. And San Diego is proof positive of that fact. Holy crap, people go crazy for the smallest little trinkets. It was insane. And we're not going to be giving away just a cheesy little keychain trinket. No, sir. We're giving away free comics. So, boom, that's happening later this podcast. So make sure you listen in. I'm going to tell you exactly what you do, podcast to podcast, to win some books from us, okay? So that being said, Tyler, let's hit some specifics. What excited you that came out from Comic-Con?
Well, we'll start with DC because it doesn't have as many big things. There were a couple things that were kind of exciting. They in the Zero Year panel, for instance, the main Batman panel of the event, really was predominantly talking about the issues that had already come out, but it did talk about Batman 24. It's going to be double sized. I'm always down for twice the Batman.
Right.
And it apparently not only features a different Batman than we've ever seen, like a different suit. Obviously, it's Bruce, but a different suit, but also a new Batmobile that Capullo promises is not like anything we've ever seen before, and that's pretty cool. So I'm down for that. Right out of the gate, though, I'm going to tell all the listeners, if you're looking for anything that's a bigger splash than that from DC, you ain't going to find it. These are the kind of things that they put out. Hey, in this book, you're going to have a new Batmobile. Like, that's the level of what we're seeing here. So keep that in mind when we talk about Marvel later. They were really quiet about Forever Evil, which I think is really... there's got to be something about that event that we just can't know that is so big. But the one thing I think that was interesting, the one question I know a lot of people have been asking is this about all the villains have won and what the heroes need to do, or is this villains versus villains? And it's villains versus villains. That kind of makes me a little bit more excited for this. I didn't really just want to watch the tried and true story of the bad guys won, but now they're so bad they're falling apart. You know, like I've seen it 1,000 times. But I do kind of want to see Captain Cold lead a rebellion against Lex Luthor's troops. You know, like that sounds kind of cool. So it made me a little bit more excited for that. And they did the one nice thing from DC. They premiered a lot of art, a lot of really cool looking art. The covers for all of the tie-ins, besides the Argus one, which why does that even exist? But the other covers and everything, they all look really cool. So that's a thing.
You're not the only one that, because let me tell you, when they were talking about the Argus tie-in, the audience was silent. No one gave a crap.
Oh, yeah.
And same thing with the Forever Evil tie-ins. Like, they talked about 5 of them, and the response was tepid at best. It's pretty obvious. I think DC's getting the picture that no one cares, because even at one point, Geoff Johns even took a shot at Vibe. Like, he made fun of the character, explaining that he knows no one likes him. They know that there are certain books and certain characters that just are not resonating with the audience. And I'm not quite sure why they're pushing them forward, but there has to be some behind-the-scenes editorial push that's making these things happen, even though the audience just really doesn't care. I don't get it.
It's weird, this need for them to shove characters down our throats. It doesn't, you're going to like this guy whether you like it or not, is never responded well. And the people they want me to like, I'm supposed to get excited about people like Stargirl and Frankenstein? No thanks. It's never going to happen. I'm sorry. Yeah, it is really weird. I don't know. That part in particular I thought was very strange. The one really, no pun intended, shining light that I did kind of pull from this, I have a lot of good feels about where Green Lantern is headed. There was a panel, of course, for Green Lantern. There were a couple of them, actually. But I've been a little shaky on the post-Geoff Johns era. Mm-hmm. Not necessarily because I feel like it's lacking, because I think it's good, but it's just moving at a really odd pace. I don't know. It's rough. It's been one way for a long time. It's a difficult transition.
Right.
But the storylines that they were promoting look pretty cool. Guy Gardner going back to the Red Lanterns is a thing that I'm all about. I think that's... I was getting a little burned out on Earth Green Lanterns. I like Simon. I have no problem with them adding him, but like, it's time to reel some of this in, especially if we're going to be, based on the end of John's run, it looks like we're getting another Earth Green Lantern, a girl. So we need to cut these back. Well, now Kyle is white. Guy will be red. You know, John's going to go somewhere eventually. Something has to come of that. So it'll be fun to see these things change.
And Jeff Johns told us that Hal Jordan's back in the Justice League next year. Like he's coming, he's coming back. So, yeah, there's a lot of rings running around.
Yeah, oh yeah, there always are, and I'm fine with that. But some of the changes are pretty cool. We'll see. I'll always be reading Green Lantern. It's not a thing that ever changed, but I would love to love it rather than like it. So I feel good about it, especially about Guy. Other than that, though, it was a little things. They confirmed October 9th for the launch of Superman Wonder Woman. Harley Quinn is getting her own series, mm-hmm. So 9 out of 10 female cosplayers rejoice. Batman's going to show up in Talon. Batwing is going to Italy. You know, it was like little stuff. Like, hey, remember these books? Read these books too. And like, that's cool, I guess. But it was really, really hush hush. So something's right around the corner, and I'm wondering what it's going to be.
Well. I've been on the fence and vacillating back and forth on whether I'm excited for Trinity or not. And after sitting in on the Trinity War panel, I have to say that I'm interested in the concept of the story. I'm still not sold on the execution. I'm not a fan. I've been on record. I'm not a fan of Ray Fox. I know he's a big part of writing a good portion of this with all the Trinity of Sin stuff. I haven't been a big fan of the way Justice League's been being written, but I did like the first issue. You know, I like the first issue of Justice League of the Trinity War. It's great. I think it's interesting, some of the stuff that's happening. You know, the whole bit with Constantine trying to take Shazam out of the picture. It's cool. But the way that Jeff Lemire and Geoff Johns explained the thought process behind Trinity got me intrigued. Essentially, they said the whole point of this story is to look at what happens if the public loses faith in the heroes, which essentially allows the villains to rise to power, and that's the whole, you know, forever evil thing. You know, and Superman being the first step in breaking down all of the heroes in the public eye. I thought to myself, okay, that's cool. And then they continued on where they were saying that at the core of this, it's nothing more than a murder mystery. That's really what this is. It's a murder mystery, and it involves Superman, Batman, and Wonder Woman. All the other characters are bit players. Those are the three important ones. And if you think about it, really, they're the Trinity of DC.
Yep.
So I see what they're doing here on multiple levels. Sounds good. I dig it. They promise that every thread, every outstanding little side story from all the Justice League books are going to be tied up by the end of this, so that when it's done and they can move forward. Okay, sounds good. I'm not sold on the Forever Evil stuff either. I will say this, though. I was kind of happy. Someone asked the question if the Joker was coming back for Forever Evil, and they said no. They're keeping that card out, which is good. I was happy to hear that.
Yeah.
Yeah, but, you know, again, it is. They dropped a lot of little stuff. You know, it's nice to know that Dr. Fate's going to end up in Justice League Dark, they said. I don't know how he's going to get from Earth 2 over. I don't know if it's going to be a cameo or permanent, but I like that. I'm a big Dr. Fate fan. Yeah.
Yeah. No, that's cool. That book really needs a few more recognizable faces.
It does. It does. It's bad. Yeah. I'm not going to lie. It's kind of bad.
No, it's pretty bad, yeah.
They said still no Booster Gold yet, which kind of sucks for a lot of us Booster Gold fans.
I know. Where is Booster freaking Gold?
I love Booster Gold. Me too. And they keep teasing him. Yeah. So I know that something's coming, and they were a little coy. We're like, no Booster Gold yet. So he's going to show up. It's just a matter of when. But they did say that the Martian Manhunter is going to start getting some serious play next year, which is nice. So it was good. The panels, though, from DC, like we said, they were a little stale. But there was some amusing stuff that happened. Geoff Johns and Jeff Lemire started a segment which I call "Fucking with the Press," where they started dropping little nuggets, and you could see people in the audience furiously taking notes. And it was hilarious to me, because if you have any sense at all, you know that they were lying through their teeth. It all started off when they dropped the little nugget in the middle of answering a question about Firestorm killing off Nightwing. And people are like, what? And they start writing down things. And then later on, Jeff Lemire talks about how Wally West is going to take up the mantle of Nightwing and become the new Nightwing. And people keep writing more stuff down. And then finally, I think to drive it home, they talked about the DC Star Wars crossover where Deathstroke fights Boba Fett. And people erupt like, oh, this is going to be the greatest thing ever. It's like, come on, guys. It was pretty funny, though. And I was surfing the press to see who reported any of that stuff, because I was curious if I was going to see any Firestorm's going to kill Nightwing stories. But
breaking news.
Yeah, exactly. But other than that, yeah, the DC panels were pretty dry. They weren't bad, but... And I get the fact that creators are creators. They're not necessarily entertainers. And a lot of people can't sit up at a table and really engage an audience. And unfortunately, the guys that DC trotted out, man, it was pretty stale and sad. I mean, Geoff Johns is okay, nice guy and everything. But Jeff Lemire's a low talker. You could barely hear what he was saying. And I'm pretty sure Ray Fox is a robot, because he showed no emotion through any of it all. I mean, it was just like, oh, I'm droning.
You hate Ray Fox so much.
I do. I wanted to like him. I was like, oh, I'll go to the panel. Maybe he's a cool dude. No, not at all. It was just this droning voice. Oh, just like his writing. I mean, it was just bad. Ugh. Anyway, so yeah, DC, nothing spectacular. But Marvel, on the other hand, right?
All right, so... Marvel, the moral of the story here is that Marvel came out of left field with a whole bunch of surprises where DC didn't even really come onto the field. And mostly it was little stuff. It's not tied to the major events. It's all little side storylines that are pretty cool. For instance, if you're one of the three people that remembers Marvel UK, well, then you are really excited to find out that Marvel UK is actually coming back. Not forever. It's coming back for a limited series. You never know what limited series means. That could be one of four. That could be we're not putting an end just away. We don't know.
Right.
But essentially, it's clearly going to be, it's every character you could imagine coming back. Which, some of these are confusing, because how do we do Death's Head when Death's Head is... right in the pages of Iron Man right now. Like, I don't understand if it's going to be something different. I don't know. But the obvious people like Pete Wisdom and Captain Britain will be there, but all the obscure people, Motor Mouth and stuff like that from the Marvel UK brand will be coming back. So, I mean, that's a cool thing. It's not, you know, if you don't care, you don't care. But if you're down to read some nostalgia, some of those books were pretty cool. Some of those characters were pretty cool. Young Avengers is having a big crossover thing, which is kind of cool in the sense that it was also a crossover of artists. It's a big collaboration across two issues, which basically is sort of the ending of this arc and the start of the next. That's one big New Year's party where pretty much everyone who's young in the Marvel Universe is going to be involved. It's not just the normal crew. I like that book. I don't love that book. I like Kieran Gillen's stuff a lot, but that book in particular is a little bit, it is what it is. I like it a lot, but it's not, it's a kind of a hard book to recommend. But it sounds like this little event could be pretty cool. Along with that, on a completely different note, Gillen also is writing the next Wolverine origin, which I can't decide. Part of me is really excited because Gillen is really good at making unlikable characters likable. At the same time, how many times can we do this origin, man? Like,
yeah.
How many times can you tell me the story of Wolverine? And this one, I mean, it's not retelling the origin. It's picking up from where Origin ended. So he's out in the wolves. You know, he's Mowgli. He's getting raised by Babu. And I got an evil tiger coming after him, I assume, and a snake. There are cool aspects to this. Apparently, Mr. Sinister is going to be highly involved. I think Mr. Sinister is a very underappreciated villain. You clearly do not.
Oh my god, I'm vomiting in the back of my mouth right now. Ugh.
Oh, I fingers crossed for choking. The I don't. I mean, it's gonna be. Don't worry, people. Sabretooth is confirmed. It looks like so. You know,
shocker.
We can't possibly have an origin story that doesn't involve Sabretooth. I don't know. I just, it's one of those things that I'm definitely going to read it. I have no doubt I'm going to read it, but I can't help but wonder, like, just when does the Wolverine stop, man? When does it stop? I guess it never stops. I'm going to see the movie tomorrow, so who am I even to complain? Bigger Uncanny Avengers. This is sort of a larger thing. The next event is coming. I'm particularly excited about this, not because of the event, but because of the artist that's coming with it. Steve McNiven is coming to this book. I don't hate the art of the current book, but for the super serious tone that this book wants to take, I can't think, besides maybe like David Finch or Lenil Yu, I can't think of anyone else I'd rather have writing this series or drawing this series than McNiven. If I'm supposed to believe this story now is really intense, and it's so racial and it's so charged and it's got there's so much going on in this book. I'm really excited for that. And the event is Ragnarok now. It's basically the Uncanny Avengers versus Red Skull and Kang and the Apocalypse Twins and the new Four Horsemen. So good luck to them. The promo image for it, it's kind of hard to interpret. It's very clearly a Wolverine-sliced Scarlet Witch mask, which is interesting to me. But then it looks like it might be Wolverine's skeleton holding it. So I don't know. I mean, obviously he's not going to die, because then we can't make 1,000 Wolverine books. But I don't know. Maybe he will. Fingers crossed.
Come on, man.
Yeah, right.
You know better than that.
Speaking of no one staying dead in comics, Nightcrawler's coming back, which everybody kind of figured out from that teaser image from Inhumanity where Nightcrawler was huge in the middle of it. But Nightcrawler's coming back, and from the sounds of it, oh, also, hold on, I'm forgetting the other important part. Nightcrawler's coming back, and the only way we can do it is by getting another X-Men book. So Amazing X-Men number one will start the story of another team. Now, I'm going to tell you who's on this team. I know you probably weren't expecting it. It's led by Wolverine.
Okay, stop. Stop.
I'm not even kidding.
How? All right, look. Have they tapped into the S.H.I.E.L.D. Life model decoys to come up with this many Wolverines to run around the globe all at the same time? Because this is beyond ridiculous now.
It's ridiculous. No,
it's beyond ridiculous.
Yeah, it's really, there's no book that doesn't have him in it at this point. Like, it's really ridiculous. The one surprising part from this book, we're getting a new X-Man, or X-Woman, I should say, in the form of Firestar? Apparently because Jason Aaron really liked Spider-Man and his Amazing Friends. So he really always wanted to get her into one of these books. I didn't even realize Firestar was a mutant. But I guess she is. Honestly, does anyone know? I don't think anyone knows. I really don't. I don't think anyone ever asked.
I don't think anyone cares.
Yeah, I don't think anybody cared. But so that's a thing. Oh, and also Storm, Iceman, Beast, and Northstar. Because God forbid Northstar went away with Astonishing. And it's about getting Nightcrawler, who it turns out, not dead. His soul is stuck in a demonic dimension controlled by his demon father. And his demon father is a pirate. And so Nightcrawler is swashbuckling his way through this world. I still don't understand to this day where Nightcrawler became a swashbuckler. I don't recall that ever happening. But yeah, that's a thing. So that's the one thing. If we were going to check the eye roll meter, that one clearly got to like a 10, because really, I mean, really. But if you're a Nightcrawler fan, I've never been.
See, I love Nightcrawler, but even I think this is ridiculous.
It's pretty ridiculous. Like, I don't know. And I don't even like Nightcrawler, so there's no part of this that I'm excited for. Speaking of eye rolling, So Longshot is getting a huge push.
I was waiting for you to say something about this. I was like, if any of the 90s resurgence is going to catch Tyler's interest, it's going to be Longshot. And I'm cool with it. I'm excited about this. He's one of the few 90s characters that I kind of liked.
Yeah, Longshot. You would think I would like Longshot more, considering he really is the 90s.
Right. You know, he has more belt pouches than any person on the planet. So you should be happy to see him back.
But I don't believe that he's going to have the belt pouches. Oh. That's the thing. Part of what makes me worry about this book is he made a big deal about how they came to him and said, we want him to be handsome. We want him to be good looking and cool. And now he's like redesigned with cool, attractive, modern dayness in my this book does not sound like it's for us. This book sounds like it's, I don't know for who exactly, but not for us. I'm going to check out the first issue.
Oh, me
for
too.
Sure. I mean, it's a limited, it's like you always say, you know, a limited series. And even if you don't like it, what, you're in for four, maybe six, yep. maybe eight issues tops. So, you know, it's not a big deal. But I have a hard time believing that that's going to be a thing. Last but not least, and this one I'm actually pretty cool with. I'm kind of looking forward to this. In X-Men, just X-Men, the all-ladies X-book, which is fantastic. It's short-lived so far, but it was really good so far. Lady Deathstrike is coming back. Not surprising. She's in the movie. You know, we gotta give the push. But she's coming back, and she's bringing an entire sisterhood. We're getting a sisterhood of evil mutants. But the new Lady Deathstrike look is badass. She almost looks like, I don't know, it's a combination of like Domino and the Crow. It's I don't know, it's a cool new look. I'm glad it's not the same old do-rag, white t-shirt, padded pants, 90s Lady Deathstrike. Like, where are you still buying those clothes? How do you only have one outfit for 20 years? Like, I'm glad to see they kind of updated the character. The blades look different, like her fingers and whatnot. I don't know. It was just a cool thing.
Right.
I really like that book a lot. I think it's just very different, really mixed up the X formula, and this is going to do a good job of keeping that going. But you know what? Moral of the story is whether it's swashbuckling Nightcrawler or whether it's cool revamped Lady Deathstrike, all of these share one thing in common. You didn't see any of them coming.
Right.
And you really didn't. I mean, now again, do you know everything that's coming from Marvel now? Sure feels like it. But you know what? They've got so much stuff and they publish so many books now at
right.
such a high clip that you can really let us know all these things, because in a month or two, it's already over and it's not that big of a deal. So, I don't know. I was really excited about Marvel coming out of it. If I had to pick a winner between the two as to who had a more, you know, bananas show, it's not even a contest.
Oh, no. Without a doubt, it was Marvel. Even on the panels that were a little more depressing, like the like the Ultimates panel, for instance, there's a lot of concern right now because there's no definitive answer as to whether the Ultimate Universe is even going to survive Galactus. But even that panel was fun, even though there were a lot of people asking questions like, hey, is this the end? They were all being very coy, and it wasn't very comforting when they announced the post-Hunger event, you know, Cataclysm, the Ultimate's Last Stand. I mean, just the title alone, not very confidence-inspiring. And in fact, now that I think about it, it got even worse when Bendis described that event as, and I quote, Galactus coming to Ultimate Earth and eating it. Like, man, I don't know if we're going to see an Ultimates panel next year at Comic-Con. I mean, the future is bleak for that. But then again, on the other hand, they teased a couple things. Like, you're an Ultimates reader, right?
I read every Ultimates book.
So, for instance, they said that Miles Morales is probably going to be meeting Norman Osborn soon. So that's going to happen. Kind of cool. But they were very true to form, where they said, look, in the Ultimates, we're never going to change our stance. Dead really means dead. And the crowd appreciated it. I mean, everyone erupted into applause. So it was cool. Marvel owned this show. And all the people that sat on the panels, much better presenters than the DC guys. I mean, just all around, they had a much better showing this year.
Yeah, you really can't. I mean, if you just even just to look at the products that were reviewed, not saying that the comics aren't as good on either side, but just the general content that was portrayed, you just get this feeling like Marvel is extremely confident about what they're putting out right now. Marvel Now was, there are bits and pieces that were stronger and weaker than others, but at the end of the day, as a broad thing, I can confidently say Marvel Now was a success. It's harder to say that about the New 52. Yeah. I like the New 52, but I have a hard time saying it was a success. It really, really came to a head at this Comic-Con where I felt like Marvel came out swinging and DC was just trying to stay standing. Yeah. And I really do believe that it's not because DC doesn't have anything coming. I think it's that DC can't talk about what's coming without ruining it. But it makes it really hard for them to go to a show like this where everyone's like, gimme, 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 and all you're going to get is, hey, let's talk about the Batman issue that came out literally 2 months ago. You know, and you're like,
right?
No, let's talk about the Batman issue that comes out 2 months from now. You know, it's not going to happen. But, hey, it's Comic-Con. You never know. Come New York, we might be talking about how Marvel has nothing new to show us and, you know, how DC unveiled the fantastic thing coming after Forever Evil that we couldn't talk about before because we didn't know that, you know, Simon Baz kills Wonder Woman at the end of Trinity War. You know, whatever it is,
right. We
couldn't talk about it, so now we can talk about everything.
It's true. It's true. And, I mean, there was a lot of... So there's a lot of news coming out, and for me personally, the biggest non-Marvel / DC news that came out that just excited the crap out of me is evidently Walt Simonson is doing a Thor book for IDW. So not Marvel Thor. He's doing Norse mythology Thor in a title called Ragnarok. And I am so ridiculously stoked to see this. Now, everyone knows I am a Thor fanboy just to my core. And on top of it, Walt Simonson is the man when it comes to Thor. So I am dying to see his take on a non-Marvelized, more vicious Thor, more true to the mythology. So that was the independent news that came out that I really gravitated to. There was a lot going on. I know Dark Horse announced a lot of really cool titles. You know, Gail Simone writing the new Lara Croft Tomb Raider book, which got a lot of people really excited. A lot of stuff coming out. I don't know. Did you have any particular independent news that struck you, or were
not
you?
Not really. I don't know. I was really kind of... I mean, I guess it's not their show as much. I mean, it is, but it's more like, hey, we have these quirky books coming. And you're like, yeah, mm-hmm. I know. It's what you do. You know, it's not as exciting. Nothing that it came out of Image was any different. Image announces a new book every other week. So it wasn't that exciting. No, that Thor book, I actually did not see that.
Oh, dude.
First of all, that is, it's like he made that for you.
Yes, he did. And I'm gonna buy multiple copies of that book and just sleep with them. I'm convinced they're gonna be that good.
It's like he must have gotten your letters. But it sounds really cool. So that's actually, I agree. That sounds like the biggest thing to come out of Comic-Con for as far as the indies go. But, it's so media saturated at this point, whether you love that or you hate that, that it's going to make little voices really hard to hear when everybody's screaming about, you know, new movies. It's hard for...
You know, it is, but I know there's a lot of noise about how Comic-Con isn't about comics anymore and how movies and TV are taking over. But honestly, for the most part, I don't buy it.
No, I don't either. I think that's a load of crap.
You could spend all 4 days in panels, Artist Alley, and half the convention center that's, you know, dedicated to comics and not see a single TV, movie, or video game related thing. I mean, it felt like 60% of the comics industry was there. Everybody was in attendance. You could throw a stone and not hit an artist that you knew, a writer you knew, an inker you knew, hell, an editor you knew. It's there for the comics. Yes, there's other stuff on the side, but that's because it's ginormous. So there's room for both.
I don't buy it either. I don't look at all the news we just talked about that came out of this con that is strictly comic related, and there are a lot of things we didn't talk
about. Oh my god, yeah.
So like to act like yes, are movie panels and TV show send-offs and Dexter panels and that kind of stuff really a bigger part of it than they would have once been? Yeah, absolutely. But is that such a bad thing? If it brings 140,000 people to come check out this thing that's mostly still comics, whether you like it or not, I'm fine with that. It can't hurt. It certainly can't hurt.
I agree. And there's a lot of crossover stuff, too. If, for instance, and the one I've been dying to talk about. Oh, my God. I'm so excited. But before I get to it, this event, while I'm so excited, also left me scratching my head. So during the Warner Brothers panel, Zack Snyder rolled out at the end unannounced and talked a little bit about Man of Steel. And he began his pitch for Man of Steel 2, which everyone knew was coming. Man of Steel made so much money. There was no doubt in anyone's mind that Man of Steel 2 was coming before Justice League or any of these other movies that had been teased. Did you hear about this?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, all right. So he has the actor, and I forget his name, the one who played the general at the end of Man of Steel, come out and read something in his booming voice because Zack Snyder said he didn't have the voice to pull it off. So the guy opens up some paper, and he goes, "I want you to remember, Clark, in all the years to come, in your most private moments, I want you to remember my hand at your throat. I want you to remember the one man who beat you." And now right there's where I have a problem, because at about the fifth word, I immediately got a raging nerd on. And by the tenth word, I had goosebumps knowing what was coming. But the audience was freaking clueless. Like, I don't want to sound like that grumpy old man complaining about youngsters these days not knowing the classics. But youngsters these days don't know the classics. That's the Dark Knight, bitches. It was only when the Superman logo came up on the screen and the giant bat symbol lit up behind it that everyone knew what the hell was going on and the crowd erupted. I mean, holy crap, did not see that coming. This is an absolutely genius move on Warner Brothers' part. I can't wait for 2015 to get here so I can watch the crap out of this movie repeatedly.
This is a joy.
It's perfect. Everyone has been saying, oh, DC movies, you know, they don't have a handle on their universe like Marvel. Now I'm saying, I cry bullshit. I think this is literally the smartest thing they could have done. Batman is dead with the Nolanverse. They know they don't want to reboot it right away because no one's going to want to go see it, and everyone's still got Christian Bale on the mind. They know Superman made a metric crap ton of money. So, what can we do? I know. Let's take Batman and put him in the Superman movie and make the highest grossing film ever created and set up our Justice League franchise in one fell swoop. Oh, my God. My head wanted to explode. But on the other hand, my head also wanted to explode because no Wonder Woman teaser. Come on, DC. You started talking Flash after this. You're saying the Justice League is coming in like 2018. You've got the Batman Superman movie now. Not a single word about Wonder Woman. The one franchise you could probably launch clean without anyone claiming it's a reboot. Come on. I was very disappointed by that. I was expecting a Wonder Woman movie teaser to come out. And nothing. Nothing at all. I don't know.
I don't think how badly the idea for the TV show bombed is going to help your case. It's going to happen, but I wouldn't.
It needs to happen.
I don't know. I mean, tell you what. I'll tell you what I'm most concerned about this Batman Superman movie. I swear to God, if it's not called World's Finest, I am going to be pissed.
You know it's not. No.
I know it won't be. You know what? I would even be fine with Superman, Batman, World's Finest. Like, you know, like the Superman, Batman's a little on the top of this world. But I guess it's respect the classics again. But I wish we could just call it that. And it would be that. And it would be great. But other than that, and you know, and I was kind of surprised because a lot of the internet got mad about it. And I didn't even understand that. There's no reason to not be excited for this.
Because the internet is stupid sometimes. I said it. You could send your hate mail directly to Tyler. but there's no reason to be upset about this. It is the perfect move in every way possible. And it is going to be so good. Unless it turns into a buddy cop movie. Like I hope that it doesn't, you know, and I'm pretty sure with Zack Snyder at the helm of this, that it's not going to be all, hey, Supes, what's up, man? You know, a young, hip Batman. I'm expecting a grouchy old Batman to try and kick the crap out of Superman at some point. And I'm looking forward to it.
Actually, I'm pretty sure what happens is the two of them find a baby and they have to figure out how to juggle their newfound fatherhood while also living their hectic two identity lives.
Oh, dear Jesus. Please, please, Internet, disregard that theory. That is horrible. And yeah, Tyler will now be taken out back and shot.
You heard it here first, folks.
Yeah. Breaking news. Right after Firestorm kills Nightwing.
Oh, dude, that's the end of the movie.
Oh, I ruined it. Dear Lord. All right. Well, before we dive into our reviews for the week, I want to lay out the rules for that free comics giveaway I was teasing earlier. Here's how this is going to work. Starting today, you're eligible to win digital comics codes by doing one of two things. Either you can post a link to the show on Facebook, Google+, or Twitter using the hashtag GeekLegacyRules so I can track it. Or you can write a review of the show on iTunes and include your Twitter handle in the comments so I have a way to hunt you down. Before we record the next podcast in 2 weeks, I'm going to put all the names into a randomizer and pick one winner who will receive two comics from us. So make sure you get to step in, pimp us out, let everyone know about the show, and we're going to give you free crap. Sound good?
Free is the finest price. There it really is the finest price.
All right. So
for that matter, we should point out that we give this show away for free.
Oh, yeah, we do. That's right. We give you our time, our sweat, our tears, and our comic knowledge. And I have to put up with Tyler for a couple hours every week. I mean, come on, guys. The least you could do is pimp the show out.
Right.
Oh, man. All right. Well, let's review some books.
Sure. Sounds good.
All right. What do you got? You're up
first. Well, I'll keep it short and sweet because I know we've got people on the hook here for a while. So everything I read these past couple weeks, with the exception maybe of one, is something I felt quick and strong about. The first one was Hunger Number One. So this sort of ties in the Ultimates thing. Mm-hmm. This was the introduction of our Galactus showing up in the Ultimate Universe, which sounds like it might not go well for them. I did not like this book. I did not like it one bit.
I find that shocking.
Yeah, I do too. I was actually pretty excited for this. I mean, not like, oh my God, this is the first thing I'm reading on my pull list, but mm-hmm. I was definitely like, oh neat, Hunger came out today. I was really disappointed with it. It's predominantly dominated by Rick Jones, who, if you don't read the Ultimate Universe, Rick Jones is, I don't want to say the Ultimate Universe's Silver Surfer, but like it kind of is. Maybe almost a better comparison might almost be Captain Universe, but it's really lame. I have a really... I just hate comics that depict like the angsty youngster who just wants to go to the burger joint. Like that's what the whole first part of this book is just about, how like mad he is that he can't get to Burger Hut, and like he almost gets his burger, but then the Watchers make him go see Galactus. Like it's just very lame. And the whole Galactus thing is just very cookie cutter and very, you like rip, he pulls himself out of a rip in space. And In the Ultimate Universe, there is also a Galactus, so it's not a big dude with a funny hat. It's a massive fleet of ships called Galactus. It's three words. And I mean, it's spoilers. It fuses with Galactus, and it's just like immediate. And he's just like, this is a new place. And the Galactus is like, eat that thing. And then they see him and they go, merge. They just like crash into him and he becomes a big robot. Like,
this sounds amazing.
Yeah, do you see what I'm saying?
It sounds absolutely enthralling. I cannot wait to read this. I'm glad I spent money on it and didn't read it yet. Awesome.
This is it sounds like a comic that an eighth grader wrote, you know? Like it's like, and then Galactus like comes through space, and then the spaceships turn into Galactus too. Like it's just, I don't know. It was very disappointing. I'm still gonna read it because, again, yeah, it's a miniseries, whatever. I read everything else, it's Ultimate. But it really, I don't know. I would give this 3 out of 10 giant hats.
Oh, like, my God.
Yeah, I was really, it was very forgettable. And to have to go back and skim through it again to prepare for the podcast, I was legitimately I liked it even less the second one.
Wow, I can't wait to read this now. Yay.
Yeah, sorry.
All right. Man, I was on such a high, the Batman Superman high, and you're bringing me down like this.
Yeah, well, you know, Galactus, he hungers.
All right. Well, I'm going to break form a little bit because I want to talk about a book that's not necessarily relevant, considering it's really old, but it's new to me. So I wanted to throw it out there for anyone who may have completely missed the title like I did. And that's David Mack's Kabuki. Have you ever read Kabuki, Tyler?
I haven't. I am a big David Mack fan. Yeah. But I've actually never read Kabuki.
Me too. So I spent 5 or so minutes chatting with him at his booth, artist booth in San Diego. And first, let me say, nicest guy ever. Like, this guy is awesome. We chit-chatted about a bunch of different stuff, and I asked him to sign my End of Days hardcover, nice. Which he had no problem doing. You know, he signed it for me and was asking, you know, how I liked it, and I told him I loved it and whatnot. And then I mentioned that we talk about it, and we raved about it nonstop on this podcast. And he got so excited and thanked me. And then he started giving me free books. So he gave me 2 Kabuki trade paperbacks and signed them for me. He said, have you read these? I was like, no. He's like, here, take them. Just read them. I was like, okay. Man, how did I miss this book? I mean, the first trade he gave me, Circle of Blood, which bundles, I think, like the first 6 issues of the series, which is almost 20 years old now. And then one called Dreams, which is one he did recently, which I gather is a prequel of sorts. Whatever it is, it's redonkulous. I mean, now Circle of Blood was obviously early in his career. The art's nowhere near as polished. And the fact that it's black and white really doesn't help it. It very much has an indie 90s feel to it. But that's okay. If you're into super spy stories, which I kind of am, I kind of like that occasionally as a break from the superhero stuff. Mm-hmm. It's cool. It's very steeped in Japanese culture. So it was a cool book. I liked the story. The action wasn't over the top like a lot of books from that time. It was more story driven with just a little bit of action here and there to keep the pace. Enjoyed it. But then I read Dreams. And man, I loved the crap out of this. It's by no means your typical comic. Again, it's steeped in Japanese culture. Specifically, it's like a Japanese ghost story. And it's told... It's like someone's telling you a ghost story while you are on an acid trip. It is trippy, it's very cerebral, and it's exceptionally bold in the way the art complements the story. Now, as an art guy, this is where I geeked out, because it goes from standard comic pen and ink to watercolors to photo collages, where he's taking, you know, kabuki masks and putting them on dolls and then painting the borders around the frames. And it's crazy. And it's so good. It's almost more of an experience than it is a book. So if anyone's looking for something a little less bombastic than Ultron trying to blow up the world or Galactus merging with a space fleet, or if you enjoy a little cultural injection into your stories, I definitely recommend going back and nabbing a few of these and trying them out. I was enthralled by it, and I was upset at myself that I had missed it, you know, being that I'd heard about it for so many years but never bothered to try and hunt down an issue. So I'm going to give Kabuki, just as an overall series, 4 out of 5 Jerd stars.
Nice. It sounds really cool. I like David Mack a lot, so I will definitely check that out. That sounds like a pretty sweet thing.
So what you got, man? What's next on your plate?
All right. I'm going to talk about an anomaly in the world of comics. Let's talk about Constantine number 5. Constantine number 5 is...
Really?
Constantine? I got to be honest. I like this book. It's another one. It's not I love this book, but I like this book. Here's the thing about this book and why I call it an anomaly. I think that if I read Hellblazer, I would probably hate this book.
Who writes this book?
Oh, who does write this book?
I believe it's a certain Ray Fox.
Oh, is it Ray Fox? I'm pretty sure it might be Ray Fox.
I think it might be. And if I'm wrong, I apologize, Internet. But I'm pretty sure it's goddamn Ray Fox. So I'm not going to pay attention while Tyler talks about this book for the next couple minutes, because I'm going to disagree with everything he says just out of principle.
Jared, can you do me a favor? Can you point to me on this doll where the Ray Fox touched you?
Right on my taste buds. From the last couple of books of his I've read, and the vomit that came up into my mouth, I still taste it.
Well, I tell you what, I'm a big fan of the character archetype that is the sass mouth, magician, wizard, bat, you know, guy, detective, whatever it is, whether it be Simon Green's Nightside novels or the Dresden books come to mind, things of that nature, that style of character, I think it's a very cool kind of thing. And this book does a really good job of depicting Constantine like that. Now, I get the impression from like folks I see on Twitter or whatever else that who were fans of the character before that this is not as well received by them. It makes me really want to go back and read these other books and see, but I know I'm not going to like them. And I'm not going to go read 300 issues of something just to see if I like the new version that all those people seem to hate. But for what it's worth, I really enjoy this book. Now, it's hard to say. Right now, it's just been good because it's been kind of individual stories. I think that if I was asked to believe in Constantine over a long period of time, it would lose its shine. I just like tuning in every couple weeks to read this book and see like what crazy antics this you know, blimey bastard is going to do this time. The one part about this issue, the reason I bring it up here that made it pretty cool, this issue has Constantine as Shazam. Through a certain series of events, through a particular trick that I actually thought was pretty well thought out, Constantine steals the Shazam power away from Batson, and he very much uses it, and he can't use it for long because obviously it's not meant for him, and it tears him apart to use it. But while he uses it, you get to watch John Constantine, straight up cape wearing, costumed, lightning bolt chested John Constantine, punching the crap out of a guy. And literally, I'm just going to, hopefully most of you will appreciate the reference. He Sentry Ares this guy, and it's pretty intense. It's really, it's almost as satisfying as that, just it's not a two-page spread of the same degree. I don't know. I like this book. If you were ever interested in the character and don't want to go read 300 issues, I would check this out. If you read those other books, I'm sorry. But I'm going to give this 7 out of 10 trench coats. I almost said 9, but I don't mean that. But 7 out of 10 trench coats for sure.
Oh, I'm sorry. You're done. I literally was not paying attention to you.
Yeah. I'm done. Don't worry. You can come back. Ray Fox left.
All right. Good.
But he said he'd be back.
Damn it! And maybe I'm just not giving him a fair shake.
What makes you think that?
Well, no, I just everything
I bloodlust.
Everything I've read of his that he's done for DC, I've really disliked. But I have heard a lot of people say that his creator-owned and independent stuff is very well written, and I haven't read any of that. I hated what he did to Batgirl. I hated the first couple issues of Constantine. I'm not enjoying the stuff that he's doing with the Trinity War. So, just not my guy. Sorry.
Some folks just aren't your guy. You just are really feel very strongly about it.
All right. So, I want to finish up with Aquaman 22. So, I'm a big Aquaman fan. I love Aquaman. Aquaman is cool. And I've really liked this series. But I've been on the fence the past couple issues. It went from being one of my favorite DC titles to just almost, I don't want to say mediocre because it's still good, but I'm not excited to read it when it comes out. It's not at the top of my pile of books that, man, this is one of the first ones I'm going to read because it's freaking awesome. It slipped a little bit. And it slipped because I felt the story just kind of, I don't know, the latest story with the Dead King of Atlantis or Forgotten King or whatever we want to call him, it felt dated to me. And even the cover of this issue screamed 1978 DC Comics. And that's not necessarily a bad thing. It just feels very out of tone with everything that's happened in the book and the other things that are going on around it in the universe. And I don't know. I haven't been feeling it. So I started reading it. I was like, oh, here we go. More of the same, blah, blah, blah. And then I got about halfway through the book and Aquaman is summoning swarms of great white sharks to fight the Dead King and then picks up a derelict ship and smacks him with it and getting punched through ships. I was like, oh, Aquaman's in a fist fight. And then I started thinking, when was the last time I saw Aquaman actually hammer on a dude? And I got excited again. So I'm back on this book. The last half saved it for me. I'm good. I'm going to put it back at the top of my pull list. I'm going to be honest with myself and everyone. I don't think that the excitement's going to stay there as long as this particular storyline drags out. I kind of want this to be done. I want it to go back to the fun that was had in the first 7 or 8 issues with a lot of the self-referential humor. It had a lighter feel to it. I think this is just, it's bogged down in the story they're trying to tell, and it's getting in the way a little bit. But I liked it. I want to see Aquaman punch fools in the neck more. That was awesome. Aquaman's a badass when people let him, you know, actually fight, which doesn't happen enough, damn it. So I'm going to go ahead and give Aquaman 22, I'm going to give it 3.5 Jurd stars. I'm hoping that we go back up into the 4, 4.5 territory once this story is over, because such a cool character, and Geoff Johns does a great job with these underappreciated characters, I think. So, yeah. Did you read Aquaman?
I did, yeah, and I agreed with you. I felt Aquaman suffered from the same thing Wonder Woman has suffered from.
Yes.
As late. It's very, you can draw a very strong comparison, and just like Wonder Woman finally had that issue where you're like, all right, things are happening, this was that issue. I loved the pace of this issue. It was like an action movie, especially with the three different events going on at the same time,
right,
and kept switching in and out. No, I really liked it a lot. It did. It rekindled my hope for this series, but you're right. I don't understand why this is still so difficult to understand in the world of comics, but when is Namor interesting? When is Aquaman interesting, or most interesting? Because I agree with you, I love Aquaman, and I like Namor a lot too, but when are they their most interesting? When they're not Atlantis. Atlantis sucks. Atlantis sucks.
You're right.
It's not interesting.
It's not.
It's not interesting in the Marvel U. It's not interesting in the DC U. It's not interesting in the real U. It's not interesting anywhere. Atlantis is lame. And every time you try and make a story that's all about how they need to work on Atlantis, it makes me want to work on not reading your book. So I honestly, I don't want to see it. I don't want to hear it. I didn't mind the war. The war is always fun, but I want them to go immediately away. That's what I always loved about Secret Invasion, was that they showed up and then they've been immediately away. You know, that's what I want. And I would like to see that happen to Aquaman immediately, because it's time for them to just break out his brother, put him back in Atlantis, have them say, someday you land dwellers are going to get it, and go away, and I'll look forward to another war in 4 years.
I agree with you. I mean, I hadn't thought about it till you mentioned it, and you're right. Any story that happens outside the quote-unquote real world, I don't care what happens in Atlantis, I don't care what happens in the Savage Land, and I don't care what happens in Wakanda. Never have, never will, it's never interesting, and it always bores me to tears. So you're right. Maybe once we get out of the Atlantis storyline, this story is going to get fun again. And I really hope it does, because I love me some Aquaman.
Oh, yeah. Hell yeah.
Especially when he's having sharks bite people's faces off.
Yeah, and then that guy froze him. Dude, this issue features Aquaman punching a man through a frozen shark. Do I need to say anything else?
No. No, you don't, because pretty much Sharknado can suck it. This book is where the sharks were at.
This is where the sharks
were
at.
This is good. All right. Well, that's it for tonight, kids. Check back in 2 weeks when Tyler and I reconvene our comics tribunal and pass judgment on some more news and books. Until then, make sure to follow us on Twitter. I can always be found at The Mighty Jurd, and Tyler can be found at
Batman Inc. VP.
Don't forget to catch the Geek Legacy podcast every Tuesday, where Dave, Justin, Randy, and Amanda talk all things geek. And of course, stay tuned to geeklegacy.com for all your TV, movie, and video game news. So thanks for listening, and we'll see you all again in 2 weeks.
Thank you.